As always, we're going to begin the program while you have lunch, and the three of us up here will we'll get right to work. Yeah, watch you have lunch. Boy, wait until Buer hears about this, huh? We thought he thought he was the biggest draw for one of our lunches. He's gotten beat squarely. Nice going. This is the last of our spring series of Madison Magazine, WISBusiness.com Business Leader Forums. And we are already putting together the lineup for our fall series, which will begin in September, but we thought we would take the summer off again. So thank you for joining us. Our thanks again to Xcel Energy for sponsoring this lunch. To Jim Greer, who is managing the video camera, and a reminder that we'll pass the mic around for questions after you're done with lunch, so that we can capture the questions on videotape as well. It's really fun to end this series with Marcia Lindsay, for a lot of reasons. First of all, the work that she's doing is among the most important and current. Vital work that is being done in this state and in this region right now in terms of, I guess, who we are, our identity. Much talked about, and it's just really exciting to see the progress being made in developing that identity. But also the fact that that Lindsay Stone and Briggs is celebrating 30 years in the community. I remember the beginning of Lindsay Stone and Briggs. I think I just started at WIBA Radio, and it was a significant event at the time. And it's been 30 years of really a very important partnership in this community. Marcia's firm, which she founded and is the CEO. Has contributed probably more than we could add up in terms of dollars and hours and investment into the community. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about the branding efforts that Marcia's involved in. But let me just start, if I can, Marcia, by asking you to talk about Lindsay Stone and Briggs and your work. Looking back 30 years, where you were, where you are now.
Thank you. It's sobering. Believe me, it's sobering because in some ways there's so much more we want to do and we're just getting started. You know, I think all of us would like to be remembered more for the brains and talents and experience we have now than we had 30 years ago. So I'd like to think we're just getting started. But I just want to clarify that I am just the tip of the iceberg when we talk about Thrive or branding the state of Wisconsin. It is not my work. I'm just a sort of a spokesperson for some 35 others who are laboring on strategy and creative. And one of my colleagues is here today, Chris Schellpfeffer, who is our PR practice. And a lot of our great work is stuff that I don't physically do. I might say a thing or two about it and contribute a teeny bit, but the kudos for 30 years of really good contributions to the community and to clients really goes to our team. I did start the business 30 years ago. I was in grad school at the time. We often joke that there's a lot of talk about folks who come to grad school. Brian and I were talking about that, and you stay in town because it is such a wonderful place to live, and you put down roots and you get involved, and you can't imagine any place else being as wonderful, and that's proven true in my case. I was in grad school studying in the master's program of the Communication Arts Department, essentially human information processing, which is another word, a phrase for how the brain processes information and stores it and accesses it for decision-making and behavior. And today we call that branding. So in the course of studying that and putting it into practice, I get a client here and a client there, and then I incorporated in 78, and, you know, 30 years ago, here we are.
Talk about how the business has grown and changed. What as the community has grown and changed, how has that affected Lindsay Stone and Briggs?
Great question. There have been many things that this community's evolving has really assisted us with. One of which is recruiting and retaining employees. It used to be 20 years ago, you would call someone in Chicago or Dallas or Minneapolis or Detroit and say, you know, would you consider coming and working for us? And they would say, well, aren't you awfully cold? You know, they wouldn't know much about us. They might think we were, you know, a smaller and less dynamic community than reality. If we could get folks here, they were always quite intrigued. But what's happened today is oftentimes people who want to relocate or have a change of life contact us first. You know, the old saying that a lot of folks in the younger generation first decide where they want to live and then will seek employment in that community, and that's been the case to us. We've had some great people call us first over the years of late and said, you know, we'd love to relocate in Madison and come to work for you. So that's one of the big changes. And the other thing is, has just been the whole dynamism of the economy here and the appreciation for business in a way that didn't exist 25 or 30 years ago. I remember an article in the paper when I was in grad school that just struck me as quite bizarre. The debate was, how dare these professors work on the side for business and take additional income from businesses? And of course, today, we all love that because they generate startup companies, stem cell researchers, and you know, high-tech companies, and all kinds of things of which we're all the beneficiaries. So just a couple of the changes. It's a much more dynamic economy here, and people are taking notice.
I like the phrase, appreciation for business. I think most people probably know that you are in line to be the president of the Greater Madison Chamber of Commerce Board, which is an increasingly significant position, and you know, certainly speaks to the fact that the conversation, as you know, not everybody has the appreciation for business. I think that you referred to it at the university, but I'd like to get your sense of the environment, of the changing environment, and the role that the business community plays in the health of this city and this region, a lot of it having to do with the work that you're doing with Thrive. But how do you see the evolution of the business community as a community?
I was struck when I sat in on some of the listening sessions by Tickner, the gentleman who was drafting the economic development plan for the city, on some of the things he found in his research. Because I think they require a mindset, a mind change of us all, that things have really changed here. We have long bragged that our community is fairly immune from the ups and downs of the economy because so much of the economy here was public sector. And his research points out that the public sector here is now less than half of the economy. And when you look at what's happening to that public sector, you know, state government has budget issues. That is not growing as a set of employees. The university has budget issues. So we really can't rely on the public sector to keep this economy stable. We have to embrace business here, employers, in a way we never have before, just to maintain our quality of life, much less to address the things we want to do to improve our quality of life. We have issues like every other community, and if we want to tackle them, we need a strong tax base and dynamic leaders to volunteer for boards and commissions and things of that sort. So I do think we need to understand it's a whole new day here and need to embrace the business community as the third leg of the stool that can maintain and enhance the quality of life of Madison and our region.
There was an article recently, the past couple of days, I think, that said that Madison is not immune to recession. It sounds like you may have just said that. But.
I think that's true more now than ever. And on top of that, I think we are threatened in a way we never have before, because as our business community develops very attractive companies, the Ann Arbors, the Louisvilles, the Austins, the Boulders of the world, the Seattle, will come calling to try and attract them to be in their communities as well. So we, in the past, might have been able to think of ourselves as able to operate with sort of an isolationist strategy. You know, we can grow our own. Of course we will keep them here. That is no longer the case. Everyone else's economy is hurting, too. They're very hungry. We have very attractive businesses here. In a knowledge economy, people can live and work anywhere. And I can assure you our finest companies are getting approached by others. So we have to have a culture here that embraces business just as much, if not more, than Louisville and Ann Arbor and Austin and Boulder and Seattle, or we will in fact lose employers And, you know, it takes generations to try and replace some of those jobs and some of that momentum.
You say, and you told Judy Dowell in the piece in Madison Magazine that she wrote, Marcia, the profile that Austin, Ann Arbor, Louisville are ahead of us in marketing and in public-private partnerships. That's probably no surprise to a lot of people here. But what can we do soonest and best to start competing?
Great question. I am aware, and I probably can't give a lot of the details, either because I don't know them or they were not made available to me, that we have lost potential sightings of businesses here because those businesses felt that they would come here and they would not be embraced or they would be controversial. So I think one of the first things we can do is just look at the facts and the details of how competitive the world is. And if we can spread that word and have the general economy understand here, the general workforce, the general culture of Madison and the region understand that, we have to grow our own, but we have to offer them a business climate that's at parity or as good as or as embraces them as much as Ann Arbor or Louisville. That's part of it. So the first thing is really, I think, education of the facts and the reality. The second thing we can do is take a look at the economic development plan just done for the city. I think there's a lot of wonderful stuff in it, but yet, so far, it's fresh. It's just been there a month. It's still on paper, and we have to form those public-private partnerships and really embrace what it takes to make a plan a reality. Who's going to do what, by when, who's going to follow up, what's the definition of success, how often are you going to report those success measures. We really have to look at economic development and the fostering of our economy sort of in business terms, and let's put it on a timetable, let's make people accountable, let's make this happen. And that's really a function, I think, of all of us in this room, the chamber, the mayor's office. We have a lot to do to get to work closer together and collaborate.
In terms of branding, how do you quantify that?
Great question. There are all kinds of ways to quantify the success of branding. There are ways to measure perceptions that people have about a product or a service or a region, and the degree to which people have an awareness of those perceptions. There are behavioral metrics such as leads, generated for more information, visits to a community, hits on a website, not just hits on a website, but what parts of the website do they go to, how long do they stay, stickiness, so to speak. And, of course, there are economic measures in terms of jobs landed, their contribution to the economy, jobs retained, tax base, things of that sort. So there are multiple dimensions. Oftentimes they are put into a combined scorecard. That's sort of a phrase that says it's all simplified and you take it down to just a handful of measures. But it would be a wonderful thing for this city, this region, to start to think about things that way. Ford, Wisconsin has dealt with those things in the past. It may be this region has as well, and I'm just not aware of it. But certainly it's becoming more of a science.
I'd like you to talk about Thrive. And I don't know how many people have heard this story, but you presented that concept at a meeting of the Collaboration Council at the beginning of the year, and gave a very detailed presentation, and there was a bit of quiet in the room, and then Chancellor Wiley raised his hand, at which point there was a gasp in the room. What's John going to say? And John got up and said, I'm usually the first one to just talk about branding as just nonsense. It's junk. And he says, this is brilliant. And there was an energy and an excitement in the room, as you remember, that was really extraordinary. So it was a powerful moment, but I think it also spoke to a real sense of anticipation and a lot of time and energy had gone into this to imagining what an appropriate brand would be for this region, and you seem to capture it, at least in John's eyes and in a lot of people around that table. Talk about Thrive and what it was meant to do in accomplishing the goals that you just laid out.
Well, that was I remember that moment very well because, as you described, this was a big day to reveal the plan of the Collaboration Council and others for this this new form of economic development applied to the region, and on behalf of a lot of folks that have worked on that, including our leader of our committee, Deb Archer, who is here somewhere. Hello, Deb, wherever you are. Thank you for your great leadership on that. We presented the research findings, the rationale for the brand positioning, and ultimately the brand name and how it might be brought to life in communications. And there was this amazingly pregnant pause. It did feel like it lasted 9 months. And I thought it was an absolute bomb, because we had suggested some things that were rather avant-garde and unusual, and a lot of folks don't understand a lot about branding anyway, so we thought perhaps, you know, I hadn't done a good job of explaining it. And then John, whom I absolutely adore and collaborate with on the chamber and have known for many years, is an absolutely lovable curmudgeon. And so to your point, when he opened his mouth, I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. And then, of course, upon saying what he said, I could have kissed him, and I did later. but it was an absolutely fascinating opportunity to work on this extraordinary region in which we live. And it was the pleasure of my firm to volunteer for this initiative about 3 years ago, funded by, in part, the Community Foundation, who helped jumpstart this regional collaboration. My firm volunteered to do the research on how we perceived ourselves, how we wanted to be perceived, because we thought it might be productive to be perceived in a certain way, and in fact how we were perceived by decision makers across the company or the country. Now, my firm does this and has for a long time, we've done this hundreds of times, and never before have those three things been aligned. This was quite extraordinary in our research, in that we believed we were a region of extraordinarily creative and intellectual thinking. And then in a separate strategic planning visioning session, members of your community, some of the folks in this room, participated in a visioning session, and they felt that too was the most productive way to be seen to foster growth and the quality of life. And we put people through all kinds of methodologies and processes, so this wasn't just something cognitively they were aware of. This is something that came from inside and subconsciously, and you know, they just fell upon it. And then we did a survey of folks, about 1,000 folks across the nation, and we found a couple of things. First of all, only 14% really had any awareness of Madison at all. And of course, we think that we are on the top of everybody's minds, and we aren't. But that said, the single biggest thing a region or a community could be famous for, that people found would be most motivating in locating a business or moving there, was that it be a region of creative and intellectual innovation. So we, in fact, see ourselves and want to be seen as the single most compelling benefit that could move folks here, employers and workers. That said, we are not seen widely as having that characteristic yet. So part of the challenge of Thrive is to help this region become famous for that, both within our region and outside of the region. And of course, it always starts within your region, because we all have our self-concept, but until you sort of articulate it and make it succinct, we can't wear it as a badge, we can't foster it, we can't, you know, put it in an ad headline or on a website. So part of our job was to sort of make it all succinct so we could sort of recognize it in ourselves, celebrate it, put it in our communications for our own focus and work, and then you know, help focus external communications as well. So we launched that, as you said, in December, passed the torch then for the furthering of that to just a great staff at Thrive, Jennifer Smith and Rafe Carbonell, and Deb Archer works with them as well as part of their committee, and perhaps others of you in this room. So things have sort of been started, and we'll see where they go.
Just help me understand this, because the concept of Thrive, I think, was clearer than a lot of people feared it would be at the time. I mean, it's pretty easy to grasp. But by the same token, I think a lot of us have this image of a business saying, "I'm looking at the Research Triangle. I'm looking at Silicon Valley. I'm looking at Boston. I'm looking at Denver, and I'm looking at Thrive." Mm-hmm. How are we going to know, you know, that Thrive has really kind of captured the imagination, has raised the Madison region, the greater Madison region, to the sort of competitive status that I think so many people are, you know, really want us to get to?
A great question. The interesting thing about naming the entity Thrive was that it's sort of the quintessential benefit of quality of life. It's something that everybody wants. A worker will move to a community where he feels his or she feels her career can thrive, their family can thrive. Retirees want to retire where they can thrive. Employers want to locate where they can thrive. And that's one thing that differentiates us from the Silicon Valley or the Research Triangle or others, whose brand names really don't have the quintessential benefit. On top of that, a brand positioning such as a place of creative and intellectual energy where you can thrive has to have proof. And we have extraordinary proof here that also differentiates us from other locations. With all due respect to those of us who still have a 12-minute commute to work, some of you perhaps more, we don't have the time commuting that you have in other markets. Our beautiful landscape and our watershed is why we can thrive here, because it's so beautiful. We don't have to. It inspires us. We can go there to regenerate and thus have bigger ideas at work. There are all kinds of reasons why the arts and the rural landscape and the watershed really allow us to thrive in the quality of life and the quality of our ideas. So, to your question about how we know if it's working, it gets back to some of Brian's questions about how do you set the metrics to measure this. Do people have an increased awareness of us and the quintessential benefit of living here? Do they understand the case we can make? Can they cite the proof points for why you can thrive here? Now, that said, we do have, and probably Deb Archer and Rafe Carbonell and others could speak to this a little bit better than I could, we do have three targeted industry sectors that we want to foster here and grow here on our own, and then ultimately, you know, attract folks as well in healthcare, in bio, ag, and biotech. And so part of the measurements will be to what degree folks in those sectors stay here, move here, spend money here, inquire about moving here. All those measurements would probably first be applied to those targeted clusters, which we really want to foster. Mm-hmm.
Do you think retirees would really want to move here?
Yes, there's actually a lot of research out today that says retirees are quite interested in university towns. And some of you in this room may have been approached, as I have been, about the concept, and this is happening in some other university towns, where universities and alumni associations are building residential residences for alums adjacent to campus and healthcare. I mean, what better place to live than where you can walk to classes? Let's face it, when we were 18, we didn't appreciate that philosophy class. Today, it would have a lot more meaning. There's some interest already, and there may actually be things happening. I do know that there have been inquiries made the last couple of years about that as a concept, because Madison has such a beautiful campus. The lakes of here are just a wonderful asset, and we have such extraordinary healthcare.
Don't you think we should all go back to school at some point?
Absolutely.
Like 50, just another 4 years?
Absolutely.
Kelly was one of our speakers earlier in the year, and did a really nice job talking about the potential for tourism and what that means to the state's economy. But let's broaden it, because you've been working on that brand as well. And so now, I mean, and particularly for those of us in this region who think of how complementary Thrive might be with the other regions in the state, Marcia, and then with how we brand the state. Talk about where that works out.
There's a saying in the agency business that you may or may not have heard of, and it's a rather egocentric saying, but it is true, and that is clients get the work from the agency that they deserve. And I have to tell you that two of the most satisfying assignments our firm has ever had in 30 years of business have been our work for Deb and the Chamber on Thrive, and our work for Kelly on branding of the state of Wisconsin. And I can't thank them both for that professional and personal joy of that the last year. It is just been a wonderful experience. And one reason it's been a wonderful experience is, as thought leaders, as marketing experts themselves. They're very smart, and they were excellent guides to us. But of course, as you're alluding to, the subject matter was so terrific. And when we were approached by Kelly and her team last fall to sort of figure out, is there a way to brand the state that really enhances tourism, but also economic development, a lot of other things, we were very moved to say yes. We didn't know what we would find. We were winding up the Thrive work. We were a bit nervous. Could they be connected? Could they not be connected? It was for the research to inform us. We didn't have any preconceived notions. But the truth is that there is a connection upon reflection. And as Kelly probably told you, we had fascinating insights from research done outside the state and by folks in the state, and we were informed wonderfully by members of the Governor's Council on Tourism and her department and cabinet members. But folks in this state are perceived very accurately as being externally generous and accepting people. We enjoy having a good time. We accept people for who they are. We take a lot of responsibility. And one of the great phrases was, boy, if you want something done, give it to someone from Wisconsin. We're fairly well known for that, as well as the fact that, you know, come here, be yourself. You can be who you are. We really do accept folks. And as a result, there is not an inch of this state, apparently, that has not fostered original thinkers. And as a result, their absolutely amazing output or quirky output. So when you think about this state and you think about fish boils or supper clubs, things that exist nowhere else, or who on earth would build the house on the rock, or a 100-foot muskie that you can walk inside, or when you think of the amazing original thinkers, whether they're Jamie Thompson on stem cell or Pleasant Rowland, or the things that have been done by the Kohlers, or Curly Lambeau, who said, you know, let's start a professional football team. Every inch of the state has been a beneficiary, as have we all, of this amazingly original thinking in the state, which comes in great part, we think, perhaps from the ethnic heritage, from the pioneers here, from creators who chose to start cheese plants here because, you know, they themselves were artisans. I mean, you know, there's some ethnic or historic reason for all this, but the net of us all is it is really who we are. It's in our DNA. It's something that's highly marketable out of state to tourists, and we think to folks who might want to locate employers here or folks who might want to live here. It's sort of a badge of honor because it's a wonderful thing to be, you know, to be rather famous for being accepting and original thinkers, and people want to live here because they want to be next to other original thinkers, like folks, like to hang out with folks like them, and so they want to hang out with folks like us. And when you think about that, Madison, as being somewhat famous for being, you know, 37 square miles, 77 square miles surrounded by reality, is sort of that state's brand on steroids. The ultimate, some people would say, quirky, creative, intellectual. But in truth, Madison is made up a lot of us who moved here from small-town Wisconsin. So it's all connected. We are who we are in Madison because Madison perhaps gave us permission to be, you know, what was really inside of us, and we could be here a little bit more than what we might have been able to be in Manawha, Wisconsin, for example, where I grew up. So there is a big connection. It wasn't anticipated, but I think it is truly all connected and again, something to celebrate.
Is the cheesehead image a positive thing?
Absolutely. It's not only positive, it's a contributor. When you talk to folks out of state about their impressions of Wisconsin, it is one of the reasons they say those folks in Wisconsin really know how to have fun. You can go there and be who you are. They're totally accepting. You know, and who on earth would come up with the original idea to make a cheesehead hat? I mean, it is all connected. It is part of what we have to celebrate. It's a proof point for the fact that we are so original here, both proving that the entrepreneur that came up with the idea is a rather original thinker, and that a lot of folks here feel that they can be whoever they are, and isn't that great? So whoever you are, you know, come here and start your business, live here, have fun.
You'd also mentioned stem cells and how we're known for that. It seems like it's been a couple of years now, but there were moves in the legislature to ban that. Do you think there's a lingering effect that's what people think about, that they remember about Wisconsin?
I don't think so. I couldn't say that for a fact. Being a good marketer, I'd always want to couch that and say, well, we probably should double-check that through research. But one of the good things and one of the bad things about the world today is there's so much going on that sometimes if something hasn't been totally over the top, it is forgotten or it recedes into memory. And I'm not sure some of that controversy, if it did get national coverage, got it much more than a day or two. And let's face it, there's been an awful lot of stuff that could replace it in the meantime.
It's fun to talk about the cheesehead, Marcia, but it reminds me that we really should spend a second talking about some of the real challenges that the state faces as well. Drunk driving, number one in drunk driving. We've got a bad reputation in the African American community. We have perhaps forfeited to some degree our proud tradition of clean and open government. I mean, there are some things here that we've always sort of worn as part of our identity that may not be seen as advantages. How do we incorporate those into who we are?
Great question. The drunk driving one, I think, is unfortunate, and my take on it, and for those of you who aren't aware, you know, we came out sort of like top of the nation as admitting more often than not, as citizens, we drive perhaps when we shouldn't. I was struck by two things. First of all, I think maybe we're more honest than others in this state, and I expect a lot of other folks do it just as much as folks in Wisconsin do. We just tend to be more honest about it. That's who we are. But secondly, I do think it's true. We are known to party very well here. It is part of our reality. It's, you know, we're tailgating professionals, a lot of stuff like that. So I do think that's unfortunate. It is, part of who we are. I think, like a lot of things in life issues, my answer to all of those is better education, and it starts, you know, in our schools and at home about drinking responsibly, driving responsibly, those kinds of things. It's a generational thing, and it's we need to just be much more serious about it. The same thing with opportunities for people of all ethnic and religious backgrounds. I think if in fact it starts in the home and in the schools, that there really is no difference between us, and there need not be differences between us. If you look for something, you'll find it, even if it's not there, so just don't even look. That is also a cultural thing that needs to be embedded in families and the schools. I am just so appreciative of my parents, despite the fact I grew up in a very small town where we were all very white and tended to be all Northern European. I can never recall them saying anything disparaging about any ethnic or religious group, and it has been such a gift in my life to not have, that I know of, anything going on back here. But again, it's something that has to be consciously embedded into the culture, and perhaps we need to take a more serious look at how to do that. Open government is a challenge, because you're right, we have been famous and really valued our governmental systems here. We always used to brag that, boy, in Wisconsin you could get in trouble for buying a legislator a hamburger. Unfortunately, the situation has changed dramatically, and I lament that the actual reading of newspapers in their printed form may detract a bit from that watchdog activity. Because the difference between reading a newspaper and, for example, going online is when you're paging through the newspaper, serendipitously you come across stories and ads that you wouldn't necessarily be looking for. Consequently, some issues and ethics and responsibilities are brought before you that you might not have anticipated. So that makes more people aware of things that they might not click on, you know, if they're looking on a website to pursue. So I think it because of the changing newspaper scene for us all, you know, buy them, read them, keep it up. But in addition, I think it behooves folks such as you and your great editorials, and you are so terrific on this, Neil, and you've got had decades of doing this, being a watchdog, and bringing it onto a minute. Hey, this is happening. Take notice. I think all media have to elevate their watchdog status, and because it will only come from grassroots and the people demanding that things change, or that we maintain our Midwestern ethics, in everything we do.
Thank you. One last question for me before we open it up to the floor, and that's I think the assumption is that our marketing efforts are indeed international in scope. Is that true?
You mean marketing Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, yeah.
I'd have to turn to Kelly for that. I do know that at times there is PR and things that goes overseas. I don't know that you do much proactive advertising overseas.
But when you think of our image.
Oh, our image, we are very well known, partly through our alumni associations and also the governors, various governors taking their trade missions overseas, yes.
That both Thrive and the state, when you craft those messages, that they're crafted in part to appeal to an international audience.
Absolutely, and I would bet money that Governor Doyle in Ireland last week did happen to talk a little bit about, you know, what makes Wisconsin different. And I'm proud, as I know Kelly is, that we were able to, by positioning the state, give him a shorthand way to sort of articulate that in a briefer way than perhaps he had before.
Questions for Marcia? And if you would just give Jim a chance to bring the microphone over to you so we can capture him.
Jimmy would ask you a question. You have a good question.
Tom,
okay.
Go ahead.
I'm Marcia. I'm Marcia Cachetta.
Hello, Marcia.
What about the local communities surrounding Madison? How are they involved in Thrive? And what are you seeing with those communities in terms of selling the brand?
Again, Deb could probably speak to this more than I could, but there was a great deal of groundwork laid before Thrive was even launched as a brand name, where Jennifer Alexander and Rafe and Deb and Mark Buehr and Gary Walters and others went out to the various communities and said, you know, this is a phenomenon that's happening everywhere. You have to market yourself as a region. We are not competing with each other for employers or workers. In fact, how many of us live in one community and commute to another? We are not enemies. We're all in this together to keep the region strong. So there was a lot of groundwork laid with folks saying, would you consider this? How would we do it? How would we structure it? How would we work collaboratively? And there are some marvelous sort of guidelines that folks have agreed to. So it's not just those guidelines, it's the voice they had in sort of an advisory council that manages all of this. So there are actually 8 counties that comprise Thrive that have been involved from almost the beginning in advising them and finding ways to work together and collaborate and informing the marketing and informing the marketing materials that we created. So this is embedded already in the region, and that also means now that they have some of the tools that we created, they are using them for themselves. It might be that Sauk City has an initiative of its own, but they do it with some of the materials from Thrive. So we're all sort of connected. And it's a wonderful thing that, again, is just getting started, but will build over the years like any, you know, any good collaborative effort. It takes years to get going.
Tom, question.
Hi, Tom Linfield from the Madison Community Foundation. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about some of the other regional developments, sort of the Thrives in the rest of the country. How have they worked, and how have the successful regions, how much of that is just organic, that it grows, that they become known for music or art or biotech or whatever, and how much of it is stemmed from branding efforts?
Great question. Oftentimes, how one positions oneself is based on stuff that already exists, that's already there. It just maybe hasn't been codified or articulated. So for a lot of places like the Research Triangle or the Silicon Valley or Ann Arbor or Austin, you know, some of that stuff started first, and then they just had a better way of articulating it. I do think, however, that some of them were more visionary or had more initiative than others in taking what they had and running with it. Austin, for example, really understood the importance of music to attract a young workforce and the jobs they would bring with it, and they have become famous now for a lot of the music in their culture, and they have found very efficient ways to embed it into the culture of the whole U.S. You listen to public radio and music, and they, you know, Austin City Limits and all these kinds of things just remind you of that brand. They have frequency built in that people hear about Austin all the time and think of it as a great place with great, you know, musical culture. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did they kind of get this and then became famous for it, or did they decide to become famous for it and then create things within their culture, initiatives, that they funded with the city and with community foundations and things that helped jumpstart it? In Austin's case, it was both. I suspect it's that case too, where it was sort of a yin yang, and Ann Arbor, I know it's that way in Louisville as well. I think we're babies in that area here. We're just starting, but I think there's a bright future for us in that collaboration, where with a little bit more focus now, we can choose initiatives that will help foster that, become famous for them. They'll foster more things, and sort of what we already are will become more synthesized and more focused, and we'll have, well, the Institute for Discovery is a perfect example. Thrive had nothing to do with it, but boy, I have no doubt we will leverage that as just a wonderful example of, you know, this creative intellectual culture here that will benefit the whole region.
Hi, Jeannie Engel from the Wisconsin Historical Society's Foundation. And the Historical Society has used your firm for our branding process. I'm curious, oh, and also, if you're interested in researching your own roots and finding out where you come from, the Historical Society is the place to come. My question is about the brand of the contiguous states. What's Illinois doing? What's Iowa doing? What's Minnesota doing, and how are we different from them?
Fascinating question. And yes, do go to the Historical Society if you haven't looked up your ancestors. It's a fascinating thing. In some ways, Wisconsin is a bit late to branding, and that a lot of states have had an initiative before us. That said, in some cases, what a lot of others have done is rather superficial in branding. In other words, they have taken a very old-fashioned view of branding and said, we're just going to come up with a slogan and sort of retrofit it on the state. It won't have any depth or meaning or proof points. It's just going to be sort of like advertising puffery. So what you see when you look across the U.S. is some states have done it very smartly and some states have done it rather superficially. Some folks that have done it very smartly are the state of Virginia, which is all about, you've seen the ads for years about Virginia is for
lovers.
Well, another word for love is passion, and they have sort of talked about that that passionate archetype of the lover and manifest that in all they do, and you can see this a bit on their website, which is wonderful and interactive if you haven't gone there. It's great fun. But they have really blown out the idea that you can have a very passionate, sensory, sensual experience there because of the nature of the food or the experiences or the beaches or things of that sort. So they've done an excellent job of embedding it in everything they have done, as has the state of Oregon. Oregon is a very different state. If you've not been there, it's got deserts, it's got mountains, it's got rainforests, it's got beach, it's got Portland, it's got wonderful farms and a great culinary tradition as well. And they have positioned themselves as a place where dreamers go. You'll recall maybe 10 or 15 years ago, their ad campaign was, you know, come visit, but don't stay here. You know, we sort of want to keep people out. We're sort of dreamy folks here. And when I was in college, you know, that's, you know, that whole culture out there was sort of like California, you know, a little hot smoking, smoky kind of Birkenstock, not the real world. Well, that's part of their heritage. And so they've capitalized that as a place where dreamers go. And they have built that into a wonderful campaign that they can prove left and right, as we can prove here, originality rules. And they've manifested beautifully in a website and ads and things of that sort. So they have done it very well. In surrounding states to us in the upper Midwest, a very interesting thing, Michigan has chosen to position itself as sort of like the quintessential place to go to return to a sense of purity, how life should be with its forests and its beaches and its waters. And their whole campaign is built about pure Michigan. With all due respect to the beautiful state of Michigan and fine marketers there, it's almost a direct ripoff of what New Zealand did about 5 years ago. New Zealand's campaign is pure New Zealand. So it's not new and fresh, and I'm not sure how it's going to differentiate them from New Zealand, other than, you know, it's a closer trip. Minnesota, what Minnesota has done is very nice. A lot of their visuals and the things they talk about do not differentiate them from Wisconsin or Minnesota, so I'm not sure to what degree it's going to work for them as well as it could. It's all about exploring Minnesota. And then, of course, Illinois has a very hard time marketing itself as a state because it's so dominated by Chicago, and it's very hard to compete with the dollar Chicago has for marketing itself as a very wonderful urban experience. So Illinois has a problem about what to do outside of Chicago.
Marcia Deb Archer. I have two questions. At the Convention and Visitors Bureau here, one of the things that we've worked on for several years is a campaign called Bring Your Meeting Home. Mm. And the whole idea is that we need people here to really become champions to assist us in our marketing efforts. One of my thoughts, I've been here almost 15 years, is that I think, and it's maybe less so in Madison, but in the state, I think there's a modesty issue. I think we're very humble people, and I think it's more of a challenge for us to sort of put ourselves out there. We talk about Austin and these places that have these wonderful branding campaigns, and they're used to sort of taking bragging rights, and we don't. So one of my questions is, you know, how do we move the bar on getting people to say it's okay to say that we're a great place? The second piece is most of the brands you mentioned are tourism brands, and the brands emanate from tourism, and I'd really like your take on how we take the lead both here in this area with our Convention and Visitors Bureau brand and the state brands and really leverage that for the rest of the state, because most of the good brands in economic development has started with tourism brands.
Mm. Many questions. Let me address the first, and then I might have you have to repeat the second in case I lose my way. I think you're absolutely right. We are modest. We are hesitant to brag a lot about ourselves. I don't think that's going to go away, but I think that makes organizations such as yours all the more important because we need you to say it for us. I think if we can help you, it's by equipping all of us with a story to tell. It's if you know who you are and you find a way to say it quickly and with some proof points, it's easier to bring it up in an elevator or over dinner or at a cocktail party or something. And in so much as we can equip folks with a story about Madison and the region being an area of you know creative intellectual energy, where we you know have stem cells and all this other wonderful stuff, or in so much as we can equip people to understand that Wisconsin is a place where originality rules and we throw out examples, as I did for you today, it makes it much easier for us to bring it up, because we're given the tools by which to describe ourselves in a way that doesn't sound like we're bragging, but sounds like, boy, there's a case to be made. So I think one of the first things we can do to compensate for the Midwestern, especially the Wisconsin culture, where folks tend to be modest, is to give them the tools by which to talk about themselves easily. And it's not like you're bragging. We're just telling a very credible story in a very succinct kind of way. So that's, I think, one answer. Secondly, I do think we do need marketers in the state, such as yourself, such as Kelly. A lot of other states have been at this much more competitively than we have been. In Wisconsin, we're famous for wanting to get along. And if you're in California or North Carolina or Virginia, you know, it's sort of like roll up our sleeves. We're fighting for jobs and tourists. And they have a much more aggressive marketing attitude than we have here. And I think to compensate for that, we have to embolden you folks, empower you to be more aggressive, encourage you to be more aggressive, and equip you to be more aggressive with competitive marketing funds. And this state has never done that. I was on the governor's task force in 1987 that formed Forward Wisconsin. It was commissioned with $500,000 from the state budget. Before it was disbanded a year or two ago, its budget was still $500,000, 20 years later. You can't market a state on $20,000. Deb, how long did you fight for you know a room tax that could give you a budget? You're still, what, 20 or 30% of your... You have a budget that's 20 or 30% of what your counterparts have for marketing. You are so dramatically underfunded, it's amazing you do what you do. And for Kelly and state tourism... You know, Kelly, I'm not up to date on the latest competitive spending, but you are way under what a lot of neighboring states spend, much less states farther away from Wisconsin. So we just really sort of need to get with it. It's a competitive world out there, and you don't make money unless you spend money and invest it. And marketing today is more critical than ever in a world where we're all cluttered with marketing messages and the internet, and we've got so much going on. We really have to, equip you folks to do a better job for us because it's amazing that you're doing what you're doing under the circumstances. Yes, Camille. I'm sorry, can I do that?
You don't tend to turn left, so you probably didn't see me.
Hi.
Oh, that was a double meaning, wasn't it?
I'm Camille Haney.
And I've owned a business for 30 years, mainly working in Washington, D.C., but around the country. My question is about Milwaukee. My business was in Milwaukee for 15 years before I moved it back to Madison, basically for personal reasons, but because I was mainly in Washington. When I was in Milwaukee as a business owner, believe it or not, I was the first woman on the Milwaukee Association of Commerce Board of Directors. I'm showing my age. Then when I moved to Madison, I was there for 15 years, and I've been back in Madison for 15 years, and the head of the Chamber of Commerce, when I told him I was moving to Madison, maybe my background in Madison and in Milwaukee, maybe I could help be a liaison between the Milwaukee and the Madison business communities. And he looked at me dead serious and said, "What Madison business community?" Milwaukee then, and still to a certain extent, is seen as government. Those people who do things to us, they're regulators, this is state government, it's the big university, as opposed to, I think they're jealous because they only have the UWM. So that's a long preface to my question about, does your strategy with Thrive have anything to do with reaching out to Milwaukee, which is our biggest city, or are we just saying to hell with them, which would be fine too? Milwaukee, how are you relating to our big city?
Great question. I'm glad you brought it up. It's not my strategy, it's Thrive's strategy, and it was born from Jennifer Alexander to work very closely with Milwaukee. She has personal ties with the head of the chamber there. They have had joint meetings, spoken to each other's groups, and yes, we are not enemies, we are collaborators, and not just with Milwaukee and their regional economic development group, the Milwaukee 7, but the governor in his wisdom has created a business council that advises him, comprised of all the regional economic development groups in the state. There's the New North, which is the Fox Valley, the Milwaukee 7, Thrive in Madison, Centergy, which is located in central Wisconsin, and others. And they meet maybe once a quarter, Kelly, I think is that about it, and share best practices and information and how to collaborate together to make us all more competitive as a state and to help each other.
Congratulations on 30 years, and thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. This was a really successful